I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome aboard. So, lots gone on in recent times. We know we are marching towards the next presidential election, and it looks like Donald Trump has secured the nomination. Now, he doesn't have all of the delegate votes he needs right now, but I think by the end of next week, he'll have close to 1,200. I think that's the number that he needs, or close, but he's the only one running. We see that Nikki Haley has dropped out of the race, which is a smart thing for her to do. There's no way she could win. She still has not said that she endorses Trump. She said she can be wooed. What does that mean, she can be wooed? Does that mean Trump has to go to her and ask for her help? Well, politically, is that the right thing to do? You know, if you're the candidate and you need all the votes you can to get elected, wouldn't it make sense for you to go to your opponent's people who voted for your opponent and say, hey, listen, come on aboard. You know, I need your help. Get you here. Should Nikki Haley go to Trump? I think she did say she was conciliatory in her speech. You know, she said she wished him the best, but she certainly didn't come out and say, hey, guess what? I endorse Trump. And should she? Well, all I can say to all of my friends who are on the right and Republican people is that the last time Trump was president, the economy was better. The military was stronger. The borders were secure. Crime was low. The economy was moving. Everyone was doing well. If that's what we want to get back to, then we need to all get behind the man who would be president. Now, this is something that not only does Trump have to fight those on the left, the liberals, the nuts, the socialists, the communists, all these other people, or the media, but he has to also fight people in his own party. And we talked about this recently. Republicans, sometimes they're a little stunned. You know, I talked about is it ethical thing to do to now use your opponent's tactics that they use against you to you use them against them? And what I mean by that, is it time now for the Republicans to, you know, do early voting and do all the things that the Democrats do? And we shoot ourselves in the foot on the Republican side when we demand to stay, we are going to be the most ethical even if we lose. And we talked about that. So you can go listen to that episode on the podcast, on the previous episodes. What I'm asking here is, isn't it now the smart thing to do for any Republican anywhere to say, unless we're in power, none of the things we want, whether you're a rhino and you want certain things, or whether you're a conservative and you want certain things, you get nothing if you're not in power. You now have a former president who is going to be the nominee, and he can bring those things. Now, he's not going to bring the rhinos a lot because they're really Democrats in wolf's clothing, so to speak. But he can make the country strong again. He can help bring back the economy. We can go back to where we were before this nightmare of the Biden administration and his policies. Now, I did see somebody speaking on one of the news shows, and basically he was saying the concept, which is a concept that I'm going to say I talked about earlier. Weeks ago, it may be even longer ago, is that it's not about the individual, it's about the policies. And what policies actually work? Well, Trump policies work. Reagan policies worked, right? You get the idea? They worked. So it's about the policies, not the person. Our friends on the left, the only choice they have is to attack the person. They can't attack the policies. You know, they're gonna talk about, you know, how Trump is unfit, that Trump is a, you know, he's an insurrectionist, even though we know he's not been charged with insurrection. He didn't ask for an insurrection. January 6th was a riot, and people who committed crimes during the riot should be held accountable. unlike the 2020 riots all over the country when billions of dollars in damage was done, people actually died and were murdered during those riots in the summer of 2020. Nobody was held accountable because their political cause was good, right? So we live in a weird, strange place. When I look at this going forward, it would be smart for all the Republicans to get together and decide it's better that we're in power and that we argue amongst ourselves once we're in power about how strong we should be conservatively, if we should, you know, look at some of the Rhino things, if we should reach across the aisle and try and work with the Democrats and come up with things, because they have some good ideas. Anybody that's listened to me knows that I say that, you know, in general, there are some good ideas on the left. It's just their execution, how they get about them. The problem with them is they don't really understand human nature, or they ignore human nature, and they go round and round. So we're going to talk a little bit about crime today and the crimes that are going on everywhere and the policies that have led to this spike in crime. It's all easily identifiable, and it's easily fixable. Now, when I say easy, I don't mean that it will not be without pain and trouble, because to bring criminals under control, you have to take control of them, and you have to hold them accountable. And this is sometimes not pretty. You know, I was a law enforcement officer for 28 years. I worked in a narcotics unit. I worked in a major crimes unit. I was a patrol officer. I was a criminal investigator. And then I rose my way up through the ranks to a training officer. I was a lieutenant teaching people how to do things. And we find very often that people who are committing crimes do not want to be held accountable to that. At a time in our country where we supported law enforcement and we supported victims as the most important thing in a criminal incident, we didn't see the criminal as the victim. This is where we've kind of lost our mind with all of these things. But when there was a time when I was doing my job, you know, you didn't go out there to hurt anyone. You didn't go out to target anyone. You went where the crime was, and you took a forceful police action. So if we had people committing burglaries and robberies and assaults, we targeted the people committing the crimes. Didn't matter who they were, didn't matter their race, their color, their religion, whoever was committing the crimes, and society backed us up. So if we had to make an arrest, we didn't play the games like they do today. You know, we show up to somebody and says, hey, you're under arrest. They had one response, and one only, that should be tolerated by society, and that is to submit to the arrest, even if they think they didn't do it or didn't deserve to be arrested or whatever. But at the time, society saw we have to control criminals and criminal behavior. Otherwise, we can't live in a society that's safe for our families and ourselves and everyone. So if I would go to someone and say, hey, you're under arrest, and they pull away from me, then I would grab them physically. Now we see people, don't touch me, don't you touch me, don't you, and the cops are going on and on. I'm telling you, you're under arrest, you better submit. I'm going to tase you, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that to you. And they go on and on and on with these people who keep screaming, you can't touch me, don't you touch me, don't you touch me. Well, the law is pretty clear. When you're placed under arrest, you are to submit to that arrest. So what we would do back in the day is we would grab the person and then take them to the ground. Well, Lieutenant Joe, why would you do that? They could get hurt going to the ground. They could avoid everything by simply submitting to the arrest. When they resist arrest, and they resist arrest physically, not just with words, they start pulling away, they start swinging, they start fighting, kicking. Police officers do not take the job and say, you know, okay, somebody gets to kick me, punch me, stab me, or shoot me before I get to do anything. That's ridiculous. So what we would do if somebody resisted, we took them to the ground quickly and forcefully. And the reason you get them on the ground is then they can't run, they can't kick so well, they can't punch so well, and all they have to do is submit to the arrest. Put their hands behind their back, they get handcuffed, stood up, and put in a police car. And society supported that. We had laws that covered resisting arrest. in most states, they were felonies because we recognized as a people, you can't have individuals not complying with lawful orders of law enforcement because then things start to get out of control as they are now. And then we end up having people punching and beating, shooting and killing cops because they don't agree with being arrested. And society supported that. It was something that I remember. I went to a grand jury one time and I had to testify. And I'm going to tell the story delicately, but we got called to a house where a 20-something young man was beating his grandfather, who was in his 80s. I mean, beating him. And we get to the house and we go running up on the porch and there's an older woman standing there and she's crying hysterical and she's saying, he's in there, he's hurting him, he's hurt. And we go in and here's this 20-something year old guy on top of 80-year-old grandpa and he is wailing, punching him in the face, punching him in the stomach, punching him in the belly. And the old man can't protect himself from that. So we grab this young man and we announce, you are under arrest, stop. Well, he keeps punching. Well, we grab him and pull him off. And what's he do? Now he starts swinging at us. So what did we do? We swung back at him, right? We're allowed to use force. We're allowed to go one level higher than the force we are experiencing so that we can control the situation. So we grabbed onto him. He swung at us. We swung back. And then we decided, let's take him to the ground. So we basically knocked his feet out from under him and take him to the ground where it's safer for him because he's not standing up fighting. Now he's on the ground and we're trying to handcuff him. Well, as we're trying to handcuff him, let me put it to you this way. He got a hand free and he reached up and he grabbed me from the ground in a very vulnerable place on my body and he squeezed very hard and it was very painful. And at that point, I had to get him to release and to take him under control. And I punched this young man. And at that point, he let go of me, which I was very happy about. And we got him handcuffed. And then we took him out to the police car. Now, there was no extra beating because of what he did. He got punched because he was injuring me. Seriously. And he was not allowed to do that. That punch stopped him from doing what he was doing, stopped him from fighting with the officers, me and myself included. And we took him into custody. And that was it. We didn't beat him up. We didn't smack his head into the wall. We pulled him out to the car and put him in the police car under arrest. Now I went to the grand jury and I'm telling my story to the grand jury people. And the prosecutor says, and what did he do next? And then I explained to him just like I did just to you. And then he did that. And the prosecutor said, and what did you do next? I said, well, the only thing I could think of to get him to stop was I applied force via my fist and his face. And what did he do? And he let go. And the prosecutor said, well, that's the least you could have done. And of course, he was indicted and, you know, he had his problems. Well, funny part of that story is that about 3 weeks later, he had made bail and he was out. He was going to be charged with 3 counts of resisting arrest, 3 counts of assault on officers, aggravated assault on grandpa, all that kind of stuff. And he was working at a local gas station. And I happened to pull into the gas station. I checked my gas station to make sure nothing was going on. Nobody was robbing the place. And I see this kid and he sees me and I could see he had a look of embarrassment on his face. And he came over and he goes, hey, officer, listen, I'm really sorry for what I did. And I shouldn't have done that. I don't know what came over me. I was having an argument with my grandfather and I lost my mind and I didn't mean to hurt you. And I said, dude, I get it. But you know what you've done in that moment? You've ruined your life now. You got all these charges against you. You know, you're most likely going to get convicted, I would think. And then, you know, you're going to go to jail. And he goes, I know, and I shouldn't have done it. And I'm really sorry for what I did. Well, first of all, that showed a little bit of character, you know, for the young man. But the reality was, the whole idea was that today, could you imagine that? You got cops that are getting shot at, people pulling knives on them, beating them with pipes, and God forbid the cop fights back. Oh no, they're going to indict the cop. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, I had no malice towards this young man. I simply had to stop him from beating his grandfather and take him into custody. And then he attacked me and my fellow officers. And we had to stop him from doing that. That's how you fight crime. You don't talk to it. You don't argue with it. You shut it down. You hold people accountable. right? So that was just an interesting incident compared to the way things are today. So I had a recent call with a young man who he was an officer who ended up shooting and killing someone in the course of duty. One of the toughest things for an officer to do. People don't understand that. Cops are not trained to kill people. We don't shoot to kill. You know, we have a use of force continuum that we're supposed to use. You know, you use verbal first, then you can go hands-on. You know, then if somebody produces a weapon, you can use a baton, you can use a taser, you can use your flashlight if it's used as a baton. And if they pull another weapon, that's the next level up, a knife or a gun, you can use your gun to stop them, not to kill them, to stop them. So it's a use of force continuum, it's called, and you're supposed to go up and down the use of force continuum as the situation dictates. And the situation is dictated by the person being arrested, not by the cop. Cop says, hey, you're under arrest. Put your hands behind your back. That's your only choice. You put your hands behind your back. You can be upset about it. You may not agree with it, but that's all you do. And you know what happens? You get handcuffed and you get taken into custody. Go to court then and you can argue that you shouldn't have been arrested. It wasn't you. You didn't do it, whatever it was. You don't do it out on the street. But the times were different. You know, the times were different. I see officers today and I talk to them from all over the country and they tell me that they're basically, see, we were very proactive in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We were proactive law enforcement. And the only thing that stops crime is proactive law enforcement work. Ask any cop that you know, right? So if you're having burglaries and you wait for the call to come in and you just go take the report of the burglary, that's called reactive. That doesn't stop that burglar from committing another burglary. Or if you have a rapist on the loose who's going around raping young women, and all you do is take the report, well, then that's a reactionary police force. So the difference between proactive and reactive is that a proactive law enforcement agency in your town, your community, would say, hey, we're having burglaries. Let's go out and try and figure out the patterns that are being used. Where might the next burglary take place? How does the rapist pick his victims? Let's go to an area where there might be victims. Let's do surveillance. Let's watch and see. And when you see something start to take place, you move in quickly and you take decisive action to arrest the person. That's proactive. You go out looking for trouble. If you have an area in town that is prone to street robberies and fights and beatings, you spend time in that area. You may send in undercover officers. You may send in plainclothes officers so that they can actually get a view of what's going on in that area. And they can see trouble brewing and they can step in to stop people from doing bad things. And then the word gets out that, hey, if you're downtown, man, they got undercovers, they got plainclothes, you know, they lock you right up. What happens? The crime in that area goes down. Because people who are prone to commit crime understand that is a penalty. You're going to get locked up and they're right there. When you do nothing but take the report, when you are reactive, then they know they can commit the crime and the cops will just come in and take the report. Well, what's happening across the country is that officers are adopting a reactive mindset. They are no longer going out and proactively looking for criminal activity. Why? Because if you find someone committing criminal activity and you go to arrest them, we have told them they don't have to be arrested. You don't have to be arrested. You don't have to listen to the cops. The cops aren't allowed to touch you. Cops aren't allowed to do this, that, and the other thing. And then what happens is the officer takes appropriate, lawful action. And next thing you know, they're complained about. They're suspended. They're charged. They're indicted. They could lose their career, lose their pension, lose their livelihood. So what cops are doing across the country is they are becoming reactive. And they tell me this. They said, I'm not going to get indicted for doing my job. A lot of officers have told me that where they used to scan an area and look for criminal activity, look for robbers, burglars, people who are doing bad things, drug dealers out in the street, they used to go looking for those things to shut it down so that they would end the crime in the neighborhood. Not so much anymore. They're waiting to get sent on a call. And then they go there and they'll take a nice report. But they're not looking to get indicted. That's what has changed in our society. And we see that with these prosecutors all across the country, these Soros district attorneys who are taking the criminal side now. There was a big push in the 80s and 90s to support the victim. Worry about the victim. You know, the victim comes first. Now, the criminal comes first. Why? Because we have this narrative in the background that cops are bad, laws are bad, everything's racist, and it's only targeting people of color for crime. And that's not true at all. That's not true at all. We went where the crime was, whether that was in a white populated area, a black populated area, Hispanic populated area. It didn't matter. We went where the crime was, right? And that's when we did our proactive policing to try and prevent more crimes from affecting an area. And I always felt terrible that in some of the neighborhoods that were more prone to crime, the people there are good and decent people just trying to live their lives, and they are victimized constantly. Well, when you have all this attack on law enforcement and police officers adopt a reactive response to crime, what you get is, sure, criminals don't get arrested. They don't get in fights with the cops, but you get more victims. You get lots more victims, and the police officers take really nice reports. And then this, if you do arrest somebody, then the district attorneys are letting them go. Go ahead, go out. You know, we'll get you to trial in a couple of years. So look at what happened when our illegal migrants in New York City beat up those officers. They were captured, they were arrested, and immediately released without bail. Now, these are people who are here illegally. They usually don't have ID. They don't have a home, right? They're staying in a shelter or something. And you let them go. The purpose of bail, the reason we hold people to bail is to ensure that they show up for the process, right? Bail shouldn't be punitive. We've talked about that here 1,000 times for minor incidents, traffic violations. You know, holding people to bail is very difficult because lower socioeconomic people may not have $500 to post bail because they have a suspended license. And that's not necessarily fair. So I could see changes there. But for people who commit any kind of violent crime, like beating the hell out of 2 New York City police officers, those people you would normally hold to bail because they potentially could be a flight risk. So what do we use to determine, or the court use to determine flight risk? Are they a member of the community? Do they live in the community? Do they have a job in the community? Are they connected to the community? Well, here we have illegal immigrants who have no connection to America other than coming across the border illegally. They don't necessarily live in New York City. That's where they got bused to because they wanted to go there. They don't have a job in the area. There's no connection to them, and they're a flight risk because all they have to do is get on a bus and leave, like a couple of them did. One guy went to California, one went to Arizona, and we let them go. You think they're going to come back to court? We don't even know who they are. So they are perfect candidates for bail until we can identify him. And the reason you put up money is now you have a stake in the game, right? If you have to put up $50,000, and you're going to hang around because you want to get that money back. Because when you go to trial, when you go to court, you get your money back from bail. Bail is just simply to ensure your appearance and cooperation with the system. But what we have is people who were let go and they disappear into the woodwork of America and never going to come back. There would never be any justice. So what we find is there's lots and lots of people coming from all around the world. Thousands of Chinese people coming here. Now, I'm not against Chinese people. I think they're wonderful people. But why are they coming here from communist China? How are they getting out of communist China to come here? Is there something else afoot? Right? We don't know really who these people are. They're just here. We have lots of people from South American countries. We know that some places are emptying out their jails and their asylums like they did in Cuba back during the Mariel boat lift. Castro said, hey, they want to go to America. America said, then go. Let them. Then we don't have to feed them, house them, clothe them, take care of them, put them on a boat, get them out of here. Let them go to America. Well, the same thing's happening here. And what we're seeing recently in the New York area is there is a very violent Venezuelan gang members are here. Their name is, let's see, how do I pronounce this? Tren de Aragua is the name of the gang, also known as TDR, I think. Tren de Aragua. Very violent, dangerous street gangs from Venezuela have been sent here to America. And these are the people that attacked our police officers and disappeared and are committing robberies, rapes, burglaries every single day. So I remember when Trump ran for president the first time, and he said that, you know, lots and lots of bad people, criminals, were coming over the border. The left went nuts. Oh, he's calling all of these people criminals that are coming here. And that's not what he was saying. And that's, I have said, I've said thousands of times, I understand why people want to come here for a better life for their families. And I don't blame them. You know, if I was living in poverty in Central America and I could go to the United States and live and raise my family and have a job and have a better life, I would want to do it too. So I get it. For the good and decent people that want to come here, I think they have to follow the process, right? We can't just open the door. You don't just open your front door and let anybody walk in and sleep in your house and eat your food, right? There has to be a process to get people in here. And that's what Trump was talking about. Sure, you are getting lots and lots of good and decent people who just want a better life, but you're also getting criminals, dangerous people who will do bad things to you and your family. And that's why a closed border with a big old door in it is the way to go. Go through the system, right? So this violent gang is here, and we're seeing every day all across the country, we're seeing crime. I know our president right now, Mr. Biden, he will not say Laken Riley's name. He doesn't want to talk about Laken Riley. She's the young woman who was murdered while out for a jog at the University of Georgia, murdered by an illegal migrant. And he doesn't want to talk about her because it's just an example of what happened. So how many Americans have got to be victimized by illegal migrants to the point of sexual assault, beating, or murder, like Laken Riley? How many is the okay number? Is it okay if somebody in your family is beaten to death or raped or robbed or shot? Is it, you know, how many? For my friends out there on the left, and I know you're listening, how many of your family members is it okay for illegal migrants to attack? Not the good, decent people, the criminal element that's here. How many of your family members, or is your daughter, is it okay if they rape your daughter? Is it okay if they beat your father to death coming home from work? Is that okay to fit your desire to, oh, America's bad, we got to let everybody in, right? Crime is one of the things that we can cut down on by doing things properly. And we'll talk more about that when we come back in a minute.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we are back, ready for part two of our get-together today. All right, so I tell you about the Healthy Cell products. Lieutenant Joe, why do you tell us about them all the time? Well, because they're paying you, right? No, they're not. I do not get paid by Healthy Cell products. I was introduced to them because they were on the network here, and I take the immune boost. I've been taking it for several years. I find it works great, keeps me healthy. All right. I have a cousin, young guy in his early 30s, trouble sleeping. I said, hey, you ought to try this stuff, REM sleep from Healthy Cell. He tried it. He says, hey, I've finally been able to sleep after years. I'm actually getting a night's sleep. And then they have Focus Factor for people who have some cognitive issues, can help clear up your thoughts and make help you to think more clear. But Healthy Cell, they're on the network here. I'm telling you, if you need any of those things, check them out. It might be able to help you. All right. So we're going down the crime road here. We're talking about the crimes and what goes on. Well, there was another bill that just came out recently. And Republican Joni Ernst came up with this bill, a law that she proposed, that basically would say any illegal migrant who commits a violent crime would be held by ICE. ICE would be notified and they would be held and detained until they had their trial or whatever. They wouldn't just be released and let back into the community to victimize you and your family. Well, Mr. Durbin, a Democrat, fought back against that bill because his thought was, well, if we do this, then there could be people who were victims of human trafficking who were brought here against their will, and then they commit crimes. They can be held in detention by ICE, or if they're a domestic violence victim and then they commit crime, they can be held. This is so twisted of thinking. So it's okay to let very dangerous people go because other people you have sympathy for might be. No, you just create the bill that says, you add to it or you adopt the wording that says, okay, violent crimes, rapes, sexual assault, homicides, aggravated assaults, whatever it is, those people will be held to account and they will not be released back into the population, especially if they're here illegally and we don't know who they are, right? So I can't believe that. Mr. Durbin says no to that, shuts that bill down. Now, what has he just said? Well, it's okay. He's one of these people telling you how many of your family members is okay to be beaten, robbed, raped before we'll do anything about it. Because, you know, other illegal immigrants who come here and may commit crime, we don't want them getting caught up in the system. Does that make any sense to you? You know, if you're going to come here for a better life, come here, get a job, work, don't commit crime. See, that's the bottom line. Whether you're a homegrown American criminal or you're an immigrant criminal, don't commit crime. Now, I've gone my whole life without committing crime. It's not that hard to not commit crime, to not rape anybody, to not bash someone over the head and kill them, to not rob them, stick a gun in their face, stab them, take their stuff. It's not that hard not to do that stuff, you know? So this is part of the problem that we have, this thought pattern about criminals being victims of the system. It's not true. It's not true. Was there a time in America that people may have been targeted for their race? Yes, of course. Of course there was. Have we gone past that? Yes, we have. For the absolute most part, and I hate to have to say it like that, for the most part, most of, because we still have to say that because there'll be somebody to say, well, there are three people got in trouble and they were good people. Well, the system is there to help everyone, right? If you didn't do it, you'll be proved you didn't do it. I just had an interesting conversation with a very, very intelligent young person who's out in the world. And we were talking about perceptions. And this young person is very, very, very liberal. All right? Very, very liberal, very progressive. And in conversations we've had, and I'm going to tell you about this conversation and how it came to light and some of the things, but this person has been accosted by homeless people and has been accosted by illegal immigrants and has slowly changed their perception on this to the point that she says to me, you know, it's not right that you got these people here committing crimes. You know, it's okay that they come and want a better life, but you know, I've had people come up to me and you know, I had to run away. I had to duck into a building so I didn't get attacked. And I said, yes, you know, if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative at 25, you have no brain, is the old saying. So our conversation kind of went like this. I had asked this person to come on this show here and represent the liberal point of view. Because like I said, she's very, very intelligent. She's smart. She can articulate why she believes what she believes. And I said, why don't you come on? And, you know, we can have a conversation about these topics and you can provide the liberal point of view and I'll take the conservative point of view. And she says, well, I'd like to, but I don't want to look stupid. I don't want to look silly because of my opinions. And that got me thinking. And I said, okay, let me think about that for a minute. I said, here, let me throw this at you. If you think you're going to look silly or stupid because of your opinions, and I get that, I understand that. Nobody wants to look silly or stupid, especially on a national radio program like this. And it wouldn't be my goal to make them look bad. It would be just to discuss the points of view. I said, so if you're afraid you would look silly or stupid because of your points of view, that would tell me that your point of view needs to be better understood by you first, and then you need to have facts to back up that point of view. See, when I have an opinion, I don't have it based on a feeling. My opinions are based on real life experience, and I back it up with facts, right? So liberals, they should do the same thing. You know, back up your ideas, not just, well, it feels. So when I said this to this person, I said, so if you feel silly or stupid because of your opinions and you need to think them out a little more, that's probably helpful for you in life. Because if you think your opinion is silly, why do you think it's silly? You know, truth is truth, you know, and you can disagree on the facts. You can disagree on instances of things happening. But your point of view, if it's based on fact and reality, would not be silly or stupid. And she thought about that for a minute and she said, well, I guess you're right. Let me think about that a little more. Maybe I'll come on. I said, so we have an election coming up and it looks like it's going to be Trump versus Biden. And I know you voted for Biden last time. Who would you vote for this time? And she says, well, I'd probably vote for Biden again. I said, okay. That's fine. That's your opinion. You want to vote for Biden. You have every right. That's why we have an election, right? I said, well, let me ask you this question. Why would you not vote for Trump? And she said to me, he's just creepy and he's icky. And I said, he's creepy and he's icky. Now, this young lady's 25 years old. So she's a younger adult. But if you go on social media and you monitor social media and social studies. I do. I look at people and trends. That's what an investigator does so I can keep up on things. The word icky and creepy is used regularly, especially when describing people you don't like. And I said, well, let me ask you, what is icky about Trump? And she says, well, his opinions about women and how he treats women and the things he's said about women. And I said, okay, I think a lot of people would agree with you that some of the things we have heard reported that Donald Trump has said, you know, that when he was talking to that guy off mic, and he said, when you're famous, women let you do things to them, you can go up and grab them, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And this really offended this young lady I was talking to and offended lots of women. And I have to agree, nobody should walk up and grab anybody. But the part that they're all missing from that was that what he was saying is that when you're famous, they let you do that. Now, first of all, he should control his impulses and he shouldn't do that if he did it. But we all know that rich and famous and guys have that kind of attention from women. And women do let them do things, and they shouldn't, right? Just because somebody's rich and famous. So I said to her, listen, I would agree that anybody behaving that way is not good. That's not good. I wouldn't teach my boys to that. I don't behave that way. So I get that. That behavior can be icky. I said, now, you heard that on the radio that he said that, right? So that's your proof that he does that. Like the media says, he does it to all women, right? That's where that came from. Yes. I said, well, what about Joe Biden? How about him, you know, sniffing the hair of young girls, holding hands with young girls? He's been reported to have actually sexually assaulted a woman, but nobody seems to think he's icky. And she says, well, those things weren't proved. I said, well, weren't proved. We have a million videos of him grabbing young girls and sniffing their hair and touching them while he's standing in lines. Excuse me. I said, and we had a woman who was a very credible woman came forward and said that he sexually assaulted her. She goes, yeah, but those weren't proven. I said, no, the media declared that they weren't true. The media said that it wasn't true, that this woman had no credibility. You know, the group that says all women should be believed? Well, unless it's against the Democrat. And then, of course, you shouldn't believe them. I said, so do you see that? So you may say Trump is icky because these things have been reported about him in the media that is against him, makes up lies about him. Right. Remember the Russian hoax? The media also told you that he was guilty of collusion with Russia. And they had the proof only after millions of dollars of investigations, months and months of multiple agency investigations. It comes out nothing, that it was all a lie and a hoax created by who? That's right. Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party. I said, so you're believing something about Trump because you heard him say a line to another guy talking guy talk. And I know that's disgusting to people. I said, but you're believing that because the media told you. But the media also lied to you about Trump collusion and all that stuff for years. And Biden has these activities where he's sniffing young girls, touching people, and a credible accusation of actual sexual assault. But because the media said it didn't happen, you don't think it happened. Is that correct? Well, yeah, if it happened, then he would have been charged. I said, oh, well, lots of people who engage in sexual assault aren't charged. Lots of victims don't go forward. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. I said, so this is what I'm trying to get to you, is that you can have these opinions, but you should understand everything that goes on with them. I said, now, you have a boyfriend, right? And he said, yes. I said, and he's a good, decent man, isn't he? Yes, he is. He's very good. And I said, okay, I've met your boyfriend, and I think he is a pretty good, decent guy. I said, do you think he, when he's with his friends, when he's with other guy friends, you don't think he ever sees a beautiful woman and makes a comment that if he said it out loud in front of other people or women, people would say, ew, that's gross. She goes, no, he would never say a thing like that. Now, anybody out there, any men out there that are listening to me, we know that fellas say things about the ladies that are gross. Right? That if you had to say it out loud to your mother or your grandmother or to your spouse or your daughter, you wouldn't say the things that you say. Does that mean you're going to go sexually assault somebody? No. Does that mean they were crude words, that they were stupid things to say? Right? Yes, that's what it means. It's called locker room talk. Now, people don't want to believe that that exists, but it really does. Doesn't make it right, but it really does. Men do those kind of things. I have also heard women talking about men. Oh my God, they can't talk about men. I've heard women, when I worked in an office with lots of women in the office, I would hear them at the coffee break or what they did that weekend and what they're doing here and who they want to do this with and who they want to do that with and what actor they would rip his clothes off. Is that stuff crude and gross? Well, it is. But is it real? It is real. This is how men and women talk about other men and women when it comes to, you know, desire and sexual things. What the key is that you don't act on them. You don't act on them. And, you know, to say, well, you just shouldn't even think it. I get that. It's not nice, those things that people say. Locker room talk is not nice. It's a lot of time it's bravado. A lot of times it's just not thinking. Sometimes there's alcohol involved, right? Does that mean that every person who's ever said or done anything like that, including your father, your grandfather, your brother, your cousins, your nephews, all those people. They're all bad, horrible, rotten people. No. The reality is these are things that are said. And again, they're crude. They're not nice. And you wouldn't want to repeat them in public. But that doesn't mean any of those people are horrifyingly disgusting people. It's just a reality. This is how people sometimes talk. So we have to go beyond what the media tells us. We have to go beyond a single comment and look at how people are actually treated. Excuse me. So this conversation I thought was really very interesting with this young woman. When presented with the idea of speaking out on what she believed, she was afraid her ideas would not be accepted. She'd be laughed at or they'd be uncomfortable. I said, no, if they're backed up with facts, right? If you back up your ideas and your thoughts with facts, people can disagree, but I can't see why anybody would laugh at you if you had fact with you. So it just pointed out for me, the reality is that this media is very, very, very powerful. Ronald Reagan said it years and years and years ago. The media shapes everything. Now, the modern media we're talking about, there was bias back in the day, but there wasn't the bias that there is today in the media. Today, you watch and you see not just a benign kind of a bias. You know, war is bad, but you see a vicious kind of bias. War is bad. The soldiers are bad. They're killers. They're demons. You know, we started to hear that in the 60s as the left wing had some ascendancy and they started to come and attack the soldiers as baby killers. We've talked about that, right? They spit on returning soldiers coming home from Vietnam as baby killers and this and that. And we say, were there some instances of some atrocities that take place during war? Yes, war is a bad, bad thing. And it can take regular people and they can do horrible, disgusting, ugly things. And should they be held accountable? Yes, they should. But the reality is, did they just get together and do this on the streets of Miami? Or did they do this off in a war zone where people are fighting and dying every day and it can twist your thoughts and your mind? Now, I'm not making excuses for any atrocities committed by any military. What I'm saying is that these things happen. They're real. And we look at them and we see how the media has gone so far to the other side. Can you imagine that? When I was a kid, I was watching the news and my father was very patriotic. And we're watching these soldiers come home from Vietnam and they're landing in the airport and they're getting at people are spitting at them. And I was shocked. I was like, why are they spitting at the soldiers? Why are they calling them baby killers? And, well, they don't like them. Did those young men who answered the call to draft or who signed up and went to go do the right thing to join the line of patriots throughout the years who have sacrificed their lives and limbs to do what their country needed? Did they deserve that? Were they all baby killers? Were they all rapists? Or were they over there doing their duty and they were labeled this by the media? And that became the popular fiction of who these people were. We're only now beginning to realize that almost every generation who's been called and served has been treated as heroes and wonderful people. But the Vietnam era, soldiers still have not gotten their due, in my opinion. We have a memorial for them, which is amazing and beautiful, but still in the context of the thoughts of many people who were late teens, 20s and 30s, you know, when the war was ending in Vietnam, they still have this opinion that's negative. You know, they don't see that these young men were going over there doing their duty and suffering at a great deal. And yes, there were some terrible things that happened and they should be held to accountable, but that's not the majority. And that's what the media does. The media picks and chooses sides. Traditional America, God-loving America, law-loving America, Constitution-loving America, they are bad because they are all the negative things of the past that happened throughout America. They are those people. And therefore, they're not enlightened. They're not smart. They're haters for all these things. What's this? Who's this guy? I don't remember his name, and I wouldn't give you his name if I knew. Wrote this book where he said, Middle America, rural America, are the most racist Americans. They are the most hateful Americans. They are the most dangerous Americans. these white rural Americans. Can you imagine that? They're talking about the whole middle of the country because they don't agree with liberal, left-wing, socialist, enlightened ideas as opposed to traditional America, and they are the most dangerous. Well, I'll tell you right now. Let me take you to anywhere in middle America and drop you down in the neighborhood, no matter who you are, no matter your race, your background. Let me drop you in that neighborhood and have you walk from one side of that neighborhood to the other side of that neighborhood. Will people look at you funny if they don't know you? Yeah, they might. Will people ask you what you're doing there? Yeah, they might if they don't know you. You know, most of those communities are kind of close-knit. Will they come out and beat you to death and rob you and rape you and take all your stuff? No, they won't. They won't. But are there cities in America? Are there places in America where I could drop you into that environment and have you walk from one side to the other that you would be accosted? You would be beat? You might be raped? You might be killed? You might be robbed? Is that true? Well, we know it's true. We see the crime in our major cities is completely out of control. I was recently in St. Louis, and I got there for a conference. And I got there 2 days before the conference, and I saw the downtown. And it was beautiful, all old architecture and, you know, the arch and all that stuff. I reported on it here. And it was really, really nice. The streets were clean. I didn't see any homeless. I didn't see any migrants anywhere. No people crapping on the street. Nobody shooting drugs. It was nice and clean. And I said, oh, and I saw a couple of officers. I met a couple of officers. I told them, hey, I'm Lieutenant Joe, you know, and I'm here doing this. I said, man, from what we hear, you know, downtown St. Louis is dangerous. There's crime. And they said, look to me. And it was a young white officer and a young black officer. And they looked at me and they started laughing. They said, yeah, well, whenever those conventions come into town, they bring in, you know, thousands of people and millions of dollars for the business and everything. So 3-4 days ago, we came in with force and we swept all of those kind of people out of here, moved them out of the area so that the convention goers could have a clean environment without people doing drugs and robbing them and all this kind of stuff. And our job is to hang around and monitor and see if anybody comes back, and then we move them along. And I said, you do this all the time? Yeah. Every time there's a convention or a big event in town, you know, you can't have the conventioners getting robbed and raped. So we move all these people out of town so that we can have a nice environment. I said, wow, that's pretty interesting. Now, didn't they do that in New York when they were having a big event? They move all these people out. They clean it up. Didn't they do that recently in San Francisco? They were having the Chinese president was coming, the premier, the dictator, and they cleaned up the streets. They took the homeless all the way. They pushed them all out of there, the people crapping on the street and shooting drugs. They cleaned that all up so that the Chinese premier wouldn't see all that. And then as soon as he left, they let them all come back. And that seems to be a pattern of our friends on the left that control most of these blue cities. They want to pretend. They want to set this up, but they're not really cleaning it up. How is that fair to the residents? And how does the media report that? Silence. Nothing. They don't. There's nothing racist about it then when you're cleaning it up so that the mayor looks good or so the local lefty congressman looks good. There's no problem then. Right? See, this is one of the reasons we are so goofed up. In our country, is that we don't have the same values that we used to have. We don't share those values. We are diametrically opposed on topics where we should be tolerant of each other. And that's a two-way street. Tolerance is a two-way street. I can be tolerant of you if you do things that I don't think are right and I don't approve of. I can be tolerant of it and not bother you and let you live your life. That's, you know, who am I to say what you do? But it has to go the other way too. You know, you have to be tolerant of me and what I do and not bother me living my life the way I want. You know, one of the things I saw, and this will probably be my last couple of thoughts about this today in our get together. I see this whole thing about, you know, book banning. They're banning books in school. They're banning books. They're Nazis banning books. Well, let's look at the environment. Are they banning the books from the publisher level? Are they going to the publisher saying, you can't publish this? Are they throwing the books into a pile and burning them? No. Most of these things that are coming up in the environment of a school where you have young children in the school. And while those books may be valid for people, they might not be valid in a school setting because children are impressionable. They don't always understand everything. So what parents are saying is, we don't need certain books in that library. What should be in that library are things that build character, things that build patriotism, things that build knowledge. That's the kind of books that should be in there. Things that parents should have control over should not be in there. Not that the book should be banned. No, if the parents want children to read some of those books that parents decide they don't want in there, they can go buy it and bring it to their house. And they can go over it with the child and talk about it and talk to the child about the topic. Can you imagine the furor would be if somebody said, well, we want Rush Limbaugh's children's books in the library, or we want the Constitution in the library, or we want books by other right of center individuals who talk about patriotism and talk about anti-communism and talk about the danger of socialism. Could you imagine if people wanted those books in the school library? Do you think there'd be some feet stomping and teeth gnashing? Of course there would, right? Because it's politicized. So I have no problem with any book that tells children anything that the parents think is appropriate. But the place for it is probably in their home and not in the school library. Teachers should not be indoctrinating children. They should be teaching them reading, writing, arithmetic, explaining history, correct history, not made up history, not rewritten history. And I'm not afraid to, you know, teach them the ugly parts of history. You know, that's okay. It's okay. They should know that ugly parts of history so we don't repeat it. But going in there and telling people there should be things that parents disagree with, that are of a nature that is up to the parents to decide what information the child gets and when. Those books don't need to be in that library. They can be in a public library. Take your kid to the public library and go read about all these things, or buy the book and read them at your child's home. I don't care that the book is out there. It's information, and it might help some people. But the parents have to have a right to say, listen, school should be about learning, not about all social engineering. And that should be done within the community. If the local community thinks that, then that's the way it should be. So, my friends, these times together go really very fast. There are so many things here on my pages of outrages. I don't always get to them all. I try and check them off so that I can keep moving on here. But you know what? It just means we have to get together again very, very soon. So I want to thank you for coming. I appreciate it. And what I'm always trying to do here is to get you to think. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm trying to get you to think and help us all to come to a better place. So remember, be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. I'll see you down the road.